You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
On last week's Business of Family, we narrated the story of the Hindujas, an Indian business family with an international profile. And today, we will focus on yet another Indian empire with a global footprint. My name is Rakesh. You're listening to Money Control. And today, we dig deeper into the business of family with the Mittals.
The business of family. Man of steel with the name of money. Lakshmi Nivas and the Mittals. An exclusive on Money Control.
Lakshmi Nivas Mittal's trajectory can inspire a blockbuster Bollywood film, and sometimes it does resemble a Bollywood family drama with choreographed dances, Tarun Tahiliani costumes and palatial locations, but we are digressing. Ellen Mittal's story began in 1976, when as a 26-year-old, he set up a plant in Indonesia for his father, Mohanlal Mittal. But his own destiny was still distant and waiting for him in a Caribbean island in Trinidad and Tobago, to be precise, where he would acquire the Point Lisa's plant. It would be some time before the young Mittal would go on to become the largest steelmaker in the world, establish plants in 18 countries and offices in 60, and add to his kitty acquisitions in Mexico, Canada, Germany, Kazakhstan, the United States and France, among others. Before the commodity slowdown of 2008, the Mittal plants were producing almost 120 million tons of steel annually, and the annual sales crossed the $100 billion mark. While India's total output at that time was just a little more than 50 million tons a year, ArcelorMittal was producing nearly four times more steel than the second largest steelmaker in the world, according to a report we ourselves published on Money Control. But let us not get right now into the origins of the Mittal story, because currently the Mittals are making news in India and we would like to explore just why that is. As I mentioned earlier, in 1989, Lakshmi Nivas Mittal acquired a plant in Trinidad and Tobago, but even though the beginning of the deal was auspicious, a few decades down the line, the economic climate had changed and the plant was closed in 2016 due to union issues, low steel prices and increasing costs. In the US, France and Belgium too, ArcelorMittal announced closure of some of its facilities, but we are more interested in exploring the link between the closing of the Trinidad and Tobago plant and the Mittal's current standing within India. Equally interesting is that it is only recently that the Mittal empire has made overtures to venture into India. According to a recent Money Control report, ArcelorMittal is in the race for Essar Steel, having submitted bids for the stressed steel company. ArcelorMittal's campaign for Essar Steel rides on the equity of its international operations and its success rate in reviving stressed assets. On the 12th of February this year, the company formally submitted its bid for Essar and cited their industry and technical expertise, management know-how and operating prowess as the reasons why they thought they would succeed in turning around the fortunes of Essar's stakeholders. But there was an issue. According to an amendment in India's Insolvency and Bankruptcy Code, that is IBC, promoters of defaulting companies have been debarred from bidding for the stressed assets. The backstory as to how this is relevant to ArcelorMittal is that while it sold its 29.5% stake in a company called Uttam Galva Steels Limited in order to pave the way for a smooth exit after the company defaulted on its loan repayments, there was some speculation that the global steel giant also had outstanding payments in its Point Lisa's, the plant in Trinidad and Tobago. The Mittals insisted though that ArcelorMittal Point Lisa's Limited was undergoing a voluntary liquidation process and did not have any loans from any bank, and the banks had not declared it as a non-performing asset or initiated any proceedings against that company. But still, despite the ease that the Mittals have demonstrated in their global dominance, India has proved to be a baffling conundrum. Three mega projects the companies wanted to launch have not taken off, and the investment in Uttam Galva has cost them a lot. Is there an impending turnaround in the story? Just as the Mittals are known for their turning around companies in distress, their very real struggle now is to prove that they're eligible to bid for Essar in India. But even here, they're treading carefully and not being foolhardy. After being declared ineligible to bid for Essar Steel, ArcelorMittal in May claimed that they had deposited 7,000 crore rupees into an escrow account with the SBI to cement their commitment towards settling the debt of Uttam Galva Steels and another company called KSS Petron, in which they also had a stake. This July, The Mittals said they have deposited 7,000 crore rupees in a current account with the State Bank of India, contrary to the earlier claim of putting the money in an escrow account. This may have been done to safeguard the money in case the eligibility issues do not work out in the company's favour. A July Business Line report states that the second bid is yet to be opened for Esser. Given the Mittal's single-minded resolve to finally establish their presence in India, they may succeed in clearing all impediments in the way to achieving that goal. But this episode has been humbling for the company that Indians have watched from afar in awe and sometimes envy. The Mittals have been, after all, the embodiment of not just an aspirational success story, but of the kind of opulence that the Karan Johars and the Suraj Barjatyas try to recreate wistfully when they craft their family sagas with a few big fat designer Indian weddings thrown in. The Mittals and their unapologetic celebration of excess. The Mittals are known for many things, and even those who are not aware of their business conquests have been struck by their headline-capturing, unabashedly over-the-top wedding celebrations. Not to mention Ellen Mittal's house in Kensington, bought in 2003 for $128 million, which is among the most expensive houses in the world. The house has been referred to with envious derision as the Taj Mittal, due to its marble interiors, a ballroom, a picture gallery, 12 bedrooms, an indoor pool, Turkish bath, and a parking lot for 20 cars. The three-story Neo-Palladian home was once owned by the Formula One star Bernie Eccleston and the Islamic art collector David Khalili, and is full of museum-worthy art collections. The marble, they say, came from the same quarry as the marble that came for the Taj Mahal. The most amount of collective jaw-dropping that we can all recall was, of course, reserved for the 2004 wedding of Lakshmi Mittal's only daughter, Vanisha, to banker Amit Bhatia. It was a six-day-long event near Paris in Versailles and cost the Mittals over £30 million, or about 240 crore rupees, which may pay off the debt of a country or two, but was small change for the family. Celebrities from all over the world flew to Paris to be a part of the celebrations that included choreography by Farah Khan, a play by Javed Akhtar, performances by Bollywood stars and Kylie Minogue. But the most stunning part of the wedding was one of its locations, the Palace of Versailles. It is, however, the father of the bride who was the real star of the show. It is Lakshmi Nivas Mittal who has, after all, orchestrated most of the wealth that the empire now boasts of. In December 2013, Mittal's niece, Srishti Mittal, got married in a three-day celebration that is said to have stopped Barcelona in its tracks. The wedding cost up to £50 million, and over 200 butlers, cooks and secretaries were reportedly flown into Spain from India and Thailand, while the 500 guests were made to sign confidentiality agreements. Enough wedding now. What about the business itself? The steelmaker with a Midas touch. Lakshmi Nivas Mittal has been celebrated as the world's biggest steelmaker and was named in 2005 by Forbes as the world's third richest man. And Mittal has strategized this rise very carefully. He's known to infuse lifeblood into gasping steel mills and galvanize them into profit-churning engines. The first ingredient of his tried and tested recipe for success is his knack for astute acquisitions and alliances. He also saw, before anyone else, the potential in the fragmented steel markets and decided that consolidation was the way forward. It has been said often that the Mittals, though incorporated in the Netherlands and headquartered in London, have an Indian approach to business. In 1989, when Lakshmi Nivas bought the Iron and Steel Company of Trinidad and Tobago, he replaced 60 German managers, costing $20 million a year, with 60 Indians, which just cost him $2 million. Mittal's reliance on DRI, that is Direct Reduced Iron Technology, has also held him in good stead. Right from the acquisition in Indonesia in 1976 to the multiple mills around the world, Mittal has used DRI to revive them all. Things came full circle in 1995 when Mittal acquired Hamburg Stahlwerk, where the DRI technology had originated. In 2006, Mittal Steel decided to take over Arcelor, with the new company to be called ArcelorMittal, making the Mittals the largest steelmakers in the world. Though Lakshmi Nivas's disagreements with his siblings and father have caused a demarcation between the personal and the professional, his own journey has remained more or less fruitful. Let's then start from the very beginning. Lakshmi Nivas Mittal was born on the 15th of June in 1950 in Rajasthan. He was the oldest of five children and was named Lakshmi after the goddess of wealth, who, as it turns out, blessed him amply in the years to come. When he was about 6 years old, the family moved to Calcutta, where his father, Mohanlal Mittal, started working in a small British steel company and later went on to establish his own business in the same line. Lakshmi graduated from St. Xavier's College with a first-class degree in commerce from the University of Calcutta. In 1976, in response to the curb of steel production by the Indian government, the young Mittal opened his first steel factory, PT Ispat Indo, in East Java, Indonesia. According to Wikipedia, until the 1990s, the family's main assets in India were a cold rolling mill for sheet steels in Nagpur and an alloy steels plant near Pune. Today, the family business, including a large integrated steel plant near Mumbai, is run by his younger brothers Pramod Mittal and Vinod Mittal, but Lakshmi has no connection with it. What about the philanthropic side of the Mittals? That Lakshmi Mittal's heart still beats for India was evidenced when, after being disappointed repeatedly by India's performance in sports, especially the Olympics, the Mittal Champions Trust was established with $9 million to support 10 Indian athletes with world-beating potential. In 2008, Abhinav Bindra was awarded 1.5 crore rupees for getting India its very first individual Olympic gold medal in shooting. In 2003, the Lakshmi Nivas Mittal and Usha Mittal Foundation and the government of Rajasthan partnered together to establish a university, the LNM Institute of Information Technology, LNM IIT, in Jaipur, as an autonomous non-profit organization. In 2009, the foundation, along with Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan, founded the Usha Lakshmi Mittal Institute of Management in New Delhi. With all the successes, could the controversies be far behind? Along with the applause following the imposing mills across the world and the cover stories in business magazines, LN, or Lakshmi, or Mittal, as we have referred to him throughout the story, has also been plagued by many controversies. Like when Mittal was accused of employing Marek Doknal's consultancy to influence Polish officials in the privatization of PHS Steel Group, which was then Poland's largest. Doknal was later arrested for bribing Polish officials on behalf of Russian agents in a separate affair. A major controversy also erupted in Britain when the donation by Lakshmi Mittal to the Labour Party was linked to Tony Blair's endorsement of a Mittal bid for a Romanian steel plant. There have also been multiple labour-related and safety record allegations that include reports about multiple fatalities in mines. 191 people have reportedly died in accidents in the past 12 years at the company's Kazakhstan operations, though the company has strongly rejected allegations of negligence and also accorded over $1.2 billion to improve safety measures. One of the most controversial episodes in the Mittal story was related to the steel plant based in Cork in Ireland that was closed in 2001, leaving 400 people jobless, and a lawsuit in its wake through which the government tried unsuccessfully to sue the Mittals to pay for the cleanup of Cork Harbour. But brand Mittal continues to grow. Political scandals and loss of human capital in more ways than one has not yet dulled the sheen of the Man of Steel. Whenever there's a dull moment in his story, journalists and eager stargazers like to rekindle the romance of Mittal's story in order to remind the world that this self-made billionaire who flies around the world in his private jet, has yachts, million-dollar homes and Daimler-Maybachs, began his journey in Sadulpur, close to the arid Thar desert, in a home without electricity or piped water. We are asked to remember that as a beginner in Indonesia's steel trade, Mittal was paying himself just $250 a month and driving a second-hand car. And that he's not battle-shy was proven when, after a seemingly never-ending and excruciating struggle, Mittal managed to take over his nearest rival, Arcelor. While upping his bid for Arcelor towards £18.1 billion, he had famously told the press, and I quote, "This is the most compelling offer you have ever seen. With a compelling offer, you're compelled to accept. With the best offer, you have a chance to better it," unquote. As is clear, he made an offer that could not be bettered or refused. An Outlook story on the expanse of the Mittal Empire went on to say, and I quote, "From paperclips to suspension bridge cables, shipbuilding to car bodies, hi-fi chassis, oil and gas pipes, Mittal steel is everywhere, including the 10,000 tons of massive beams known as jumbos going into the foundations of the Freedom Tower that is being built on the site of the World Trade Center's Twin Towers in New York. 70% of American car bumpers are made by ArcelorMittal, his colossus of a company. So is the beautiful Millau Bridge, the world's highest, which sweeps 984 feet above the River Tarn in the south of France," unquote. Mittal has achieved seemingly impossible success because, say observers, he likes to set targets for himself and his companies and is obsessive about the macro and micro details of his empire. His motto, say his colleagues, is we must grow, we must move on. And so he does. His son Aditya Mittal did not start in the business from a scratch like his father, but like a good Indian heir, he has done everything to fit into the patriarch's very large shoes. He studied at the prestigious Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania and is now the designated dealmaker of the business. Mittal's daughter, her of the Versailles wedding, is also on the board of his company. But LN Mittal is still the fuel on which the Mittal empire runs, and whether he's buying football clubs or defunct mills or jetting to multiple countries in a day to strike deals, he seems to be a man who has discovered that he can climb just about any mountain. And so, like the iconic mountaineer Steve Mallory, he keeps climbing them. Just because they're there, and because the climb to the top still invigorates him and keeps him hungry for more.
This is an exclusive podcast on Money Control.